Greetings, everybody out there in Dreamland. This is Rumors of Instinct. Namaste and Shalom, and thank you all very sincerely from the bottom of my heart. Subscribers, listeners, supporters, new and old. If you have been here from the first days, this is your first, episode, encounter, experience with the Rumors of Instinct podcast and Rumors of Instinct content, thank you all very much for having the curiosity to check it out and everything and to listen. I am humbled and I am extremely grateful for the support, for the numbers as they continue to rise in viewership. And highly, highly recommend you guys check out the link tree, which I'm going to be posting in the description box below for this episode, to follow it, to follow my social media accounts, which the flagship is at Rumors of Instinct, all one word. That's the official Instagram account for this podcast and for myself. Then you also can check out the YouTube channel, Rumors of Instinct Podcast YouTube, for videos, archived episodes that I have been making full-time since 2020. And I would greatly appreciate everyone to go back, and check out that library and give those videos some views and everything. Let me know what you think. But all that material is also archived in the podcast in the 80-plus episodes that are currently on there, which will always rise. So if you're listening to this and the episode count's much, much higher, then you know that when the time of this recording, it was at 88 episodes. So go back, check out those archived episodes, check out those past episodes. Lots of good material, library of information, there are volumes of it, my own personal experience and theories that I've come up, about others. So check out those archived episodes in the library. Whether you're listening to this on Spotify, Amazon Podcast, Google Podcast, Overcast, Radio Public, what have you, the myriad, Himalaya, whatever directory is your favorite, check out those episodes listed under my banner. So today we're going to be speaking about the history of the Vedas, and this will be another lesson in their continuing ongoing series to understand the scholarly wealth of information that the Vedas has, being that it's the user manual for humanity, as interpreted by many scholars, and is also really incredibly ancient chronologically, except especially to mainstream academia, where existential issues, issues of human virtues, issues of spirituality and cosmic understanding in life seem to be attributed to modern sensibilities, modern men, the latest of men, the most progressive of men, these being some of the most ancient written documents, prove that the ultimate expression of humanity isn't central to a place and time or dictated to a progress or momentum of a civilization, wherein the newest members of that civilization are granted the privilege of reaching heights never before dreamed or reached by the previous generations of that civilization. In fact, it seems to be that the virtues and the blessings of a individual are at times greater than any civilization or any long-term, bigger picture type society, because the individual can reach levels of spiritual ascendancy and mastery far, far easier alone than by following the traditions or following the educations of his neighbors and his family and his friends that make up their tribe. But to actually, see above the chaos, they have to kind of like leave the tribe, leave that primitive mindset that is living in a society, living in a city, and kind of venture forward into the wilderness of their own thoughts of being isolated and, you know, having to be independent, having to survive on their own. And also, it seems to be whatever is old is new again, in which these tenets of reaching a rarefied and more golden form of, more valuable form of humanity, an ethereal form, a spiritual form of humanity, seems to have been the original, you know, mindset of the Indo-Aryan or the Indo-European, the Aryan Indian, the mountain, the mountains of Tibet and Nepal and Tibet, the followers of the Pleiades and, you know, the star beings, the demigods themselves, the divine. Their teachings far surpass our teachings and answer many questions which have fallen into the realm of unanswerable mysteries because of their existential nature in Western society, newer society, more modern society than they might have ever dreamed about, because if they were 10,000 years prior to us with these answers, the fundamental logic would be that we would progress to asking questions without ever losing the education that we had previously, you know, gained and developed in creating these books, these Vedas, these lessons, and that the wisdom would be built on itself like bricks building a wall or bricks building a tower, and that you wouldn't necessarily need to always rebuild the structure from the very foundation forward with each new person. You would each live inside the house with the foundation and the walls and the bricks were already laid. The temple would be built, and thus not every generation would have to return to the site of the temple and rebuild it to make sure it was, you know, still a functioning temple. Unfortunately, that does seem to be the situation currently we're in, if you want to believe the Maya that we live in, the false illusion of the matrix of this reality, is that this world seems to be ever more divorced from reality, and that the ancient scriptures, the ancient writings, are always proven to be correct because we come from places of that divorce, of that illegitimacy, of that outsider nature of our very insider culture, having been uninitiated within our society, having been exiled from temples within our society due to our own profanities and due to the essential, like, invisible caste system that's developing within our society, within our modern Western world, in which spiritual castes are considered apart from other functioning labor castes. And it's not a separation due to specialization, but ultimately a kind of universal recognition and respect. It is quite the opposite. It's a separation due to a forced distancing and a forced, it's a forced separation. It's not a voluntary one. It's society saying that the spiritual caste should not interfere or influence the labor castes because that's unnecessary complications in the bigger picture, the bigger streamlining of society. That spiritual caste should not be involved with political castes because there's a separation of church and state, which is considered a more idealistic, intellectualized way of running societies, et cetera, et cetera. Well, instead of following this path in which I, as a neophyte into something, would then say I am a devotee of that subject, because I show an interest in it, let us Remember that our interests are at first scholarly and critically based. They're objectively based. And one of the things personally that Rumors of Instinct likes to do when validating subjects of belief and, interpretation of reality, of the esoteric and the occult and the religious, the metaphysical, is to see its history, to see where exactly it was grounded on, and to see the sociology of the people that created it. Having kind of gone over that in the last few videos on the subject, the last few episodes about the subject, the last other moon cycles, I find it's appropriate now to fully hit the history books and see the actual academic and objective history of these writings, and the interpretations that the modern present day scholars have for these historical realities, like how they view it in their historical context, instead of a foreigner trying to deduce it from a foreign culture. How does someone who was born in that culture deduce their own historical writings and that those writings' importance on their now modern lives, their now present day lives, this new current generation's lives? We are also going to be kind of paying heed and a respect to the full moon. This is a Scorpio full moon. This is a moon that I have heard over several different respected sources be called the death moon. There's a lot of death energies. There were energies entering our Earth magnetosphere in a form of a tunnel over the last few nights, imbuing our world with lunar energies, with cosmic energies, at levels rarely seen, for entire years in some instances. So there's no coincidence if you are feeling this vibe, if you're feeling a sense of the world being reborn or changed, know that because death is being celebrated and having a lot of influence through this full moon, the April 27th full moon, or the April 26th full moon, sorry, that you are not alone, and a lot of people, especially Scorpios, especially people of the that sign, are being impacted very heavily, being absolutely supercharged. Now we're going to be going into several video essays, sorry, that I have found online from indigenous teachers. Don't worry. It's all in English, even though the words and the phrases are very difficult to enunciate and express and with my own tongue, because I'm a lazy foreign language speaker. There is no real language barrier and no real cultural barrier that needs to be minded. You should hit the ground running, and all you have to do is open up your ears and listen to the audio that I have already selected for you to hear the history and the organization and the classification of these Vedas, and how they relate to ancient Hindu history, ancient Indian history, and ancient human history. Because those subjects are not divided amongst, they're not separated. Those are all the same subjects. So I hope everyone out there in Dreamland, you enjoy this lesson as it's educating you. And if you don't find this subject enjoyable, at least allow yourself to be educated. Like you have to bite the bullet and just allow yourself to be educated on foreign cultures and other cultures. Because they're not foreign cultures, these are human cultures. This is earth culture. This is earth religion. This is earth spirituality. This is earth history. This is as much human history as it is earth history. And if you are wanting to focus on the future and focus on the communion with the extraterrestrial, then you have to realize that there is no difference between the communion with the extraterrestrial, the CE5 event, the close encounter of the fifth kind event, and a communication with the divine, a reaching out and attempting to communicate with the spiritual, with the astral, with the cosmic, as well as you have to have roots, deep, deep roots in your own species, in your own civilization, in your own intellectual wealth and traditions, for you to be able to not only communicate on an equal level field with these extraterrestrials, but also on a spiritual level, or also on a traditional historical importance level, I say, as one person being able to offer your own personal expertise, insight, and history as a gift. You know, however humble as it is, you know, the little drummer boy just with his drums to play, that earth song, that salt of the earth song, has to fundamentally be rooted in the earth. It has to be firmly rooted into the history of the species and this world. As much as I focus on the extraplanetary and the future and the secret space program and the top secret reality, you know, that we all share, a equal big part of what my mission is to kind of remember and to keep alive the history that we are all very busy at forgetting, very busy at moving away from, moving past, as we race headlong to what we think is the secret of our existence, which is this future, which is this end goal. But reality is, you can never truly escape it, because you can't gain entry into the future without firmly mastering the past. So the more we run away from the past, ironically, the greater the distance we're going to need to turn around and backtrack until we get to the lessons that we abandoned, then carry those burdens, shoulder those burdens, you know, deal with that karma of our own history, of our own choices, upon forgetting it, to relearn those things. And then to carry that into the future as well. We'll never truly be able to escape it. We have to master it and then to carry it forward. So all the agnostics and atheists who listen to the Secret Space Program talks of mine, while I appreciate your support, while I appreciate your views, understand that there is no difference between ancient and traditional human spirituality and spiritual beliefs with that of the reality of extraterrestrials and the reality of the Secret Space Program, the Cosmic Order, the Galactic Light Federation, as well as the necessity to be a master of culture, regardless of your views on the nature of the human soul, the nature of human spirituality. You do not have to have a faith in a deity to have a mastery of human society and civilization and culture from a sociological standpoint. But you do have to know that that was why they were thinking about it. The experience, the quote-unquote capital E experience, the other, the shamanic rite, created in our ultimate idea of right and wrong ethical society. So to understand ourselves as intellectuals, as spiritual animals that have lifted ourselves from the earth and now seek to join the stars, we have to realize that upon lifting ourselves from the earth and seeing, you know, ourselves in the future, we are bringing the earth, we are bringing those roots with us. And it's not man entering a rocket and blasting away. It's a tree growing into the night sky. And right, while our future and while our destiny is in this night sky, this starry sky, our roots will still be deeply, deeply reaching into the core of the human world, of the earth that we were given. So thank you all very much for your patience. Thank you for joining me on this full moon show, this Vedic series that I'm running, and having to run solo and independently now. I thank you very much. I thank you for your patience. This is something that is not my strongest field of expertise and study, but that which I feel is equally important, if not to an even greater degree of importance than I'm giving it, to understanding the realities, the natures, the physiologies, the interconnected worlds and futures of humanity and extraterrestrial life, humanity, extraterrestrial cultures, civilizations, as we become a interplanetary cosmic species, dealing with the Galactic Federation with Light, dealing with the Orion Draco, dealing with the Astra High Command, these species which have their own formidable mental and spiritual traditions that they master and that they bring along as well. As you can see, these are trees now joining into a forest. And although you only see the canopies, you only see the trunks, the roots are actually interconnected and knotted together. And it ties the individual trees together into one shared forest, one shared jungle of reality, of life. So thank you all very much. I will be playing these videos in succession, and hopefully everyone will have the patience to, listen to them, to educate themselves on it, and then to, incorporate that, think about that throughout their day, meditate on these points. Because just hearing it, it might take multiple times to listen to it. It might be something that you're wanting to just turn off immediately. But as long as you respect the material enough to listen to it and to think about it, to contemplate it, you'll find that what I'm offering you is a door that will lead you into a better world. So thank you all very much. Here is the histories of the Vedas done by several different scholars in different video essays and different audio essays that will serve as history lessons for the four books of the Vedas and their construction, and of course the context to which of the information that they bring. So thank you all very much for hearing this. This is going to be probably the last dry academic outsider point of view. I will go into the next Vedic episode by actually playing the books of the Vedas in English and in their original language so that you can understand the poetry of it. And this will be an education process for us both. I am learning this as much as you guys are, as much as I'm trying to teach. I am learning these lessons literally the days before these episodes air. We are learning together. And this is what makes this episode so great. This is what makes this whole process so exciting for me, is that we are learning together. We are seeing new information together. So thank you very much. Namaste and shalom.
Seeds of learning, the Ashtadashi Vidyasthanas, we shall know one by one. And first comes the Vedic lore. The four Vedas, as often called as Rig, Yajus, Saman, and Atharvan. We know that Veda in general, in singular, is the knowledge absolute, and its manifestation, rather the earliest manifestation, is in the form of the four Vedas. And we have to be very proud of, because in Indian system, all these things are intact even today, and it's the most intangible sources. Even the Smithsonian institutions have declared it so, and we have the graceful, blissful responsibility of restoring, propagating, and then perpetuating for the future generation. Now we shall look at the four Vedas one by one, but we cannot go to the complete details, because in the Yajurveda itself, we have a beautiful phrase called Anantavai Vedaha. Vedas are infinite. They are infinitely large. and magnificent. Within our short span of time, we shall look into it as far as possible. The word ruk literally means verse, padyam. Then we have the yajus. Yajus also means gadyam. And then we have the saman, meaning the song. And Atharvan, the name goes because of the seer who saw that. Atharvan literally means the god of fire, the mystic fire, and also the saint who realized that, Atharvan. Why we have the Rig Yajus Saman, the verse, prose and song feature? Because Rigveda is completely made of the verses, the Chandobaddha form. That's why it is called Rigveda. And then we have Yajurveda, which is mainly meant for the prose. The gamut of Yajurveda is comprised of prose passages, though they are here and there verses. In majority, it is made of prose. And Samaveda completely comprises the songs. The tunes of Samaveda are entirely based on the lyrics of Rigveda. Rigveda is the lyric based on which Samaveda has given the tune. It means the song form of Samaveda has its basis in the verses of Rigveda. Then we have the Atharvan, which has all these three. There are one or two samans, and some of the yajus or the prose passages are there. Majority are in the form of verses. Now we shall see why they are named so. Because any literature will have these three features. No literature is beyond the scope of verse, prose and song. So any language can take only these three forms. Padyam, Gadyam, Geetam, Tridha Vibhaktam, Sahityam. That's so we have the recorded information in the Veda. This is about the structure of it. Now we shall go to the content of it. Rigveda mainly has devotional hymns. And Yajurveda has the application of devotional hymns with respect to rituals. And in Samaveda, we have deep yearnings with scintillating music. And in Atharvaveda, we have the application both for religious and secular purposes. To put it in another way, Rigveda has complete details regarding bhakti in the form of devotional hymns. And Yajurveda, adopting that, develops into karma. And in Samaveda, we have upasana or dhyana. And in Atharvaveda, we have all the three along with loka vivahara, the worldly wisdom. Every Veda has four parts. Rigveda, Yajurveda, Samaveda and Atharvaveda, though they are four in number, they become 16 because of the internal subdivision. They are Samhita, Brahmana, Aranyaka and Upanishad. Samhita means well-placed compendiums, intact. They are four in number, Rig Samhita, Yajur Samhita, Sama Samhita and Atharva Samhita. Again, there are many branches called shakhas. Rigveda has two shakhas, Shakala and Bhashkala. Yajurveda has many. During the time of Patanjali, we had as many as 101 shakhas. That's before 2200 years. Now only a few shakhas are remaining. The main two shakhas are Shukla and Krishna. Shukla means the division where the ritualistic portion and the devotional portion are clearly divided. In Krishna, they amalgamate, they combine together, they form an alloy, and it's a rather older system also. In Shukla Yajurveda, we have two branches called Kandva and Madhyandina. In Krishna Yajurveda, we have Taittiriya, Katha, Kapistila, and Maitrayana. Totally, we have six branches in Yajurveda. In Samaveda, earlier we had 1,000 branches, Sahasravartma Samaveda, but now unfortunately we are left with only three. One is Kautuma, the other one is Ranayaniya, and the last one, which is in some pockets of Gujarat, very small, and that is called Jaiminiya. Rigveda earlier had 21 branches, now only two branches are remaining. Atharvaveda had 9 branches during the time of Patanjali, and now we have only one branch. Very recently we lost one more branch, that is Paippalada, and now we are left with only one thing, that is Shaunakiya. What I mean by branches, the way of recitation, the way of oral restoration. The texts are intact, but the oral tradition is completely lost in many branches. Fortunately, because of the good offices of Kanchi Paramacharya, Pujya Shri Chandrasekharendra Saraswati Swamiji, many branches of Vedas were restored in oral tradition. Then we have the Brahmanas. Brahma is Samhita, and the details of Samhita are elaborated and commented upon in the Brahmanas, and that's why the name goes. It's no way connected with the caste Brahmana. Brahma, in the whole gamut of Vedic literature, means Veda, the great knowledge, the knowledge of the absolute Brahman. And the third branch, or the third division, is called Aranyaka, means which is meant for the meditative purposes. Samhita and Brahmanas were practiced in the villages and cities, while the Aranyakas were practiced by people, something like the senior citizens, who used to withdraw from the active life and go inwardly, and they had a bridge course towards the Upanishad, and the bridging course may be called as the Aranyaka. And then lastly, we have the Upanishads. In the Upanishads, close proximity with the master is established. That is the literal meaning of it. Upa nishadyate yena iti Upanishad. The student or the disciple sits very close to the master and listens with rapt attention the essence of knowledge, the essence of wisdom, and the heart of the Vedas, and realizes one's own self. And that's why it is called Upanishad. Shankaracharya beautifully gives in his commentary other connotations of Upanishads. Accordingly, that which dissociates us from the bondage of ignorance, and that which makes us know the highest truth. In these branches, we have many, many texts available. For example, in the Brahmanas, there are very many texts available. In the Rigveda, we have Aitareya Brahmana and Kaushitaki Brahmana. In the Yajurveda, coming to the Krishna Yajurveda lore, we have Taittiriya Brahmana. And in the Shukla Yajurveda, we have Shatapatha Brahmana. Coming to the Samveda, we have many Brahmanas. Pandya Maha Brahmana, Panchavimsha Brahmana, Shadvimsha Brahmana, Jaiminiya Brahmana, Vomsha Brahmana, like that. And in the Atharveda, we have one Brahmana called Gopatha Brahmana. Coming to the Aranyakas, in the Rigveda, again we have Aitreya and Kaushitaki Aranyakas. In the Yajurveda, we have Taittiriya Aranyaka. And in the Shukla Yajurveda, the Aranyaka is attached to the Brahmana or to the Upanishads, and so it is called Brihadaranyaka. It is once again the combined form of Brahmana, Upanishad, or Aranyaka and Upanishad. Then we have, in the Samaveda, we don't have any Aranyakas. It's a very unfortunate thing. Likewise, even in the Atharvaveda, we don't have any Aranyakas. Coming to the Upanishads, there are many number of Upanishads available. As many as 108 or even 1008 Upanishads are available. But the most important or the major Upanishads are 10 to 14 in number. Isha, Kena, Katha, Prashna, Mundaka, Mandukya, Aitreya, Taittiriya, Chandogya and Brihadaranyaka. These are the 10 well-known Upanishads. The great Acharyas like Shankara and Madhva, and even in the tradition of Ramanuja, like Ranga Ramanuja, have commented upon all these 10 Upanishads, and even many more people have commented on these 10. But there are a few more Upanishads which are very important like this. Of them, Mahanarayana Upanishad, Maitrayani Upanishad, Kaushitaki Upanishad, and Shvetashvatara Upanishad. These four are very, very important. Apart from these, there are plenty of Upanishads available, but all the wisdom of these Upanishads can as well be taken, as well be implied by these 10 or 14 Upanishads, which are too well known and too important. Of these Upanishads, some belong to the Rig, some others to the Yajus, and some other to the Saman and Atharvedan respectively. We shall know about them. Aitareya Upanishad belongs to Rigveda, while Yajurveda has many number of Upanishads. The school of Krishna Yajurveda has Katha Upanishad, Taittiriya Upanishad, and then the school of Shukla Yajurveda has Ishavasya Upanishad, and then Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. Samveda has the Kena Upanishad. Atharveda has Mundaka, Mandukya, and Prashna Upanishads. Totally, we have 10 main Upanishads belonging to all the four Vedas. While the other Upanishads, Mahanarayana Upanishad and Shvetashvara Upanishad, belong to Taittiriya Yajurveda, while the Maitrayani Upanishad belongs to Shukla Yajurveda and Kaushitiki Upanishad belongs to Rigveda. And thus, we have totally the four Vedas divided into four branches each, and many number of Samhitas, Brahmanas, Aranyakas and Upanishads. It's a very big volume of literature, though the available literature is small when compared to what it was during the time of Patanjali or Panini. We have sufficiently great amount of literature, both in quality and quantity, we should be justly proud of. But there is no meaning in mere pride without knowledge. We should know it and practice.
Friends, continuing our series of sources of ancient Indian history, today we will be dealing with literary sources. You must have heard of ancient literature like Rig Veda, Garud Puran, Sutta Pitak, Panbhata's Harshcharitra. They all are examples of literary sources. Literary sources are divided into two categories, religious and non-religious. Texts like Rig Veda, or all the Vedas and Purans, Dharma Shastras, Tripitakas fall under the category of religious literature, because these all texts are considered to be the sacred text. And on the other hand, Panini's Ashtadhyayi, Patanjali's Mahabhasya, they all fall under the category of non-religious literature. Religious literature is further divided into four categories, Vedic, Buddhist, Jaina and Sangam. While on the other hand, non-religious literature has been divided into three categories, social, economical and political. In this video, we will be dealing with religious literature a lot in detail, and particularly with Vedic literature. Now let's study about Vedas and try to understand what they were, what has been written in them and what kind of historical information do they provide us with. The Vedas are the spiritual literature of the ancient Indian culture written in Sanskrit language. Sanskrit belongs to the Indo-European family of languages. And what kind of information do Vedas provide us? Vedas provide us with materialistic, religious, and spiritual knowledge. Vedas were the texts preserved and transmitted by a section of Brahmin males, and they reflect their religious beliefs, practices, and point of views. As a source of history, these texts are used for information about life in part of northwestern and northern India during 2nd and 1st millennia BCE. Vedas, there are four Vedas, Rig Veda, Yajur Veda, Sam Veda and Atharv Veda. We will deal with each of them one by one. What does the word Veda exactly means? The word Veda has been derived from the word vid and means knowledge. The literal meaning of vid is to know. That's why the Vedas are considered to be the eternal source of knowledge. In Hindu tradition, Vedas have the status of Shruti. And why do they have this status? Because Vedas have been verbally transmitted from one generation to another for centuries. Here I would like to explain one more thing to you, that Vedic literature is basically divided into two categories, Shruti and Smriti. The literal meaning of word Shruti is that which has been heard, and literal meaning of word Smriti is remembered. Vedas fall under the category of Shruti literature, while the texts like Vedangas, Purans, Epics, Dharma Shastras and Niti Shastras, they all fall under the category of Smriti literature. In Hinduism, it is believed that Vedas were self-existent truth which was realized by rishis in the state of meditation. It is believed in Hindu tradition that Vedas were revealed to rishis by gods themselves. Each Veda is divided into four parts: Samhita, Brahmana, Aranyaka, and Upanishads. Now coming to Rig Veda, it is the oldest text in any Indo-European language. Rig Veda is also known as First Testament of mankind. It is organized into 10 books called mandals. Rig Veda Samhita is a collection of 1028 hymns and 10,600 verses. Please remember that hymns are also known as shuktas. Rig Veda contains the world's oldest surviving poetry. It has been written in poetic format. The first and tenth mandals of the Rig Veda are the youngest and longest books, while second to seventh mandals are the oldest part of Rig Veda, and they are the shortest also. Six mandals of Rig Veda from second to seventh are called Gotra or Vamesha mandals, and they are also known as Kul Grantha. Now, what does Rig Veda contains? Rig Veda contains numerous secrets and clarification about the origin of the world and the importance of the God, and a lot of advice for living a satisfying and successful life. Now, here are some notable facts about mandals of Rig Veda. The third mandal of Rig Veda contains the Gayatri Mantra, which is dedicated to Goddess Gayatri or Saraswati for the preservation of universal cosmic order. The seventh mandal describes the Battle of Ten Kings, in which King Sudas of Bharata tribe won. The ninth mandala is completely dedicated to Soma sacrifice, and the tenth mandal contains the Purusha Sukta, which explains four Varna: Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra. It is said that the four Varnas were born from the mouth, arms, thighs, and feet of Brahma or Purusha. Hymns of the Rig Veda were recited by Hotri. Hotri was the Brahmin who used to recite the hymns of Rig Veda. Indra is the chief deity cited in Rig Veda. Most of the hymns of Rig Veda are dedicated to Indra himself. The only surviving recension of Rig Veda is Shakala Shaka. And the Brahmanas attached to Rig Veda are Aitreya and Kaushiki Brahmana. The first word of the Rig Veda is Agni, and the very first hymn of Rig Veda is addressed to Agni. The words like Bharatvarsha and Jambudvipa also finds mention in Rig Veda. The Upaved associated with Rig Veda is Ayurved. Now let's discuss some more points about Ayurved. Ayurved is related to the science of medicines. Dhanvantri is said to be the originator of Ayurveda. Who? Dhanvantri is said to be the originator of Ayurveda. At present, there are three important books of Ayurveda, which are Charak Samhita, Sushrut Samhita, and Vagbhat Samhita. Collectively, these three books are called Brihat Tritya. Patanjali has also co-authored text on Ayurveda. I have tried to summarize what is there in each mandala in this table, and it is just factual information, so you can go through this slide once and read it. What remains to be explained is that the 10th mandala also consisted of Nadistuti Shukta, Griha Rituals, and Nasadhya Shuktas. Let's discuss each of them one by one. Nadistuti Shukta contains the praises of rivers, and it is important for reconstruction of geography of Vedic civilization. Now coming to Nasadhya Shukta, 10th mandal also contains Nasadhya Shukta, which deals with multiple speculations about the creation of universe and whether anyone can know the right answer or not. Griha Rituals contains the marriage hymns and death hymns, which are still of great importance. In this picture, you can see a manuscript page of Rig Veda. Now coming to Samaveda, the word Sama means melodies. It is a Veda of melodies and chants. What does Samaveda contains? It contains the rhythmic compilation of hymns of Rig Veda. Samaved is considered as the root of Indian classical music and dance. It contains 1810 verses. Most of them are borrowed from Rig Veda. Samaved also contains Drupad Raga, and it is also the base of Sangeet Shastra. Samaved is categorized into two parts. Part first includes melodies, which are known as Ganas, and part second includes three verses books called Archikas. Part first of Samaveda includes Ganas, and part second of Samaveda includes three books called Archikas. The Brahman who used to recite the hymns of Samaveda was known as Udgatri. And there are three recensions of Samaved, which are Kautuma, Ranaina and Jaminya. Jaminya is also known as Talvakara. Brahmanas attached to Samaveda are Panchivisha, Sadvinsh, Chandogya and Jaminya. And Gandharva Veda is the Upaveda associated with Samaveda. Now what is Gandharva Veda? Gandharva Veda is a technical treatise on music, dance and drama. It is also known as Natya Shastra. Samaveda was written in Vedic Sanskrit language. It exists in many scripts. In this picture you can see two manuscripts of Samaved. Above one is Devanagari script and below is Grantha. Now coming to Yajurveda, Yajur means sacrificial formula, and Yajurveda is the book of sacrificial prayers. What does it deal with? It deals with the details of performance of rituals. It was basically the manuals of Ardhvaryus, or we can say that the Brahman who used to recite the hymns of Yajurveda was known as Ardhvaryu. Yajurveda has two types. One is Krishna Yajurveda and second is Shukla Yajurveda. Krishna Yajurveda is also known as black or dark Yajurveda, while Shukla Yajurveda is also known as white or bright Yajurveda. The main difference between the text of two schools is that the Samhitas of white school contains only the mantras, while in the text of black school, the mantras are accompanied by a commentary describing and discussing various aspects of sacrificial rituals. It means that the Samhita of Shukla school only had mantras written in it, while the Samhita of Krishna school had mantras as well as commentary describing the various aspects of sacrificial rituals written in it. The other difference between the two Yajurvedas is that the recensions of Shukla are Mandhyandina and Kanva, while the recensions of black school are Kapisthala, Maitrayani and Taitreya recension. One another difference between the two schools is Krishna Yajurveda has an unarranged, unclear collection of verses, while Shukla Yajurveda has arranged and clear verses. The Brahmana attached to Yajurveda are Satapatha and Traitya. Let's discuss some more points about Satapatha Brahmana. Satapatha Brahmana means Brahmana of 100 paths. It is one of the largest Brahmana texts that has survived. It includes encyclopedia of opinions on rituals and other matters. Royal ceremonies of Rajasuya and Ashwamedha are mentioned for the first time in this Veda. Dhanurveda is the Upaveda associated with Yajurveda. Let's discuss some more point about Dhanurveda. Dhanurveda explains spiritual sciences like Purusharth, duties, deeds and also material sciences like civil and military defense and also war and politics. The Yajurveda has six primary Upanishads embedded within it, which are Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, Isha Upanishad, Taittiriya Upanishad, Katha Upanishad, Shvetashvara Upanishad, Maitrayaniya Upanishad and Shrota Sutras. In this picture, you can see a page from Vajaseni Samhita found in Shukla Yajurveda. It has been written in Sanskrit language and Devanagari script. Now, Atharva Veda. For a very long time, Atharva Veda was not even considered as a Veda. Why so? Because it was the work of non-Aryans. Atharva Veda was mainly composed by two group of rishis known as Atharvanas and the Angiras. Hence, the oldest name of Atharva Veda is Atharvangirasa. What does Atharva Veda contain? This Veda contains magic spells, spells to invoke evil spirits, hymns, and some traditional methods of healing people. This Veda is completely different from the other three Vedas and is chronologically the last of four. This is the latest Veda and contains hymns but also spells and charms which reflects various aspects of popular beliefs and practices. Shaunaka and Paipalada are recensions of Atharva Veda. The Brahmana attached is Gopatha. There are three Upanishads associated with Atharva Veda: Prashna, Mundaka, and Mandukya. Satyamev Jayate has also been derived from Mundak Upanishad. Other positive contributions of Atharva Veda are Rekha Ganit, which is geometry, Ank Ganit, which is arithmetic, and astronomy. Please remember that no Aranyaka has been appended to Atharva Veda, and Shilpa Ved is the Upaved associated with Atharva Ved. What is Shilpa Ved? Shilpa Ved deals with architecture and various arts. In this picture, you can see a page from Atharva Veda. Now, let's discuss some previous year questions.
We all know that Shiva is having Trishul in his hands. When I made my first video on Shiva, I wasn't sure whether in the times of Shiva, man knew smelting. Hence, I expressed my view the Trishul could also be a small branch of tree used almost like a walking stick to traverse the mountain landscape. Even though I was aware that mountain dwellers were hunter-gatherers, I could not think that Shiva himself was involved in hunting. That's the mental block of a typical Hindu, albeit an agnostic Hindu, which I was before deciphering on Sivaham. But after I decoded Kala Bhairavar, I realized that Shiva himself was a hunter. It naturally follows that Trishul should have originally been a hunting tool. There is a general consensus that man learnt making metallic tools before he came down to conquer the forest land on the ground. As there are not many caves on the ground, he had to build his own house and he could not have achieved it without the help of metallic tools. Hence, there is a great possibility that man developed metallic tools before he climbed down from mountains to live in the forest. Hence, there is a great possibility that Trishul was indeed made of metal and that mountain people knew smelting. In Tamil, the word Vedial means chemistry. This proves that Vedam should have meant science according to Tamils. As Shiva was a Siddha, it was very likely that he preached science, and as there wasn't a technical word for science in those times, they had to coin a word. Obviously, Vedam was an ancient word for science, and we shall see later how the word came to refer to science. As I was musing in these directions, I gave the hint in the Kala Bhairavar video that I would soon publish a video on the etymology of Rig Veda. The time has come now and we shall decipher the etymology of not only Rig Veda, but all the four Vedas and find out what they actually represent. Tamil language is like a time capsule. It retains the history of mankind in its words. We are going to see another manifestation of this great truth through this video. Tamil is the inevitable key to unlock the safe holding the true history of mankind. In this video, we are going to establish that it was Shiva who preached Vedam. Vedam means science. The four Vedas contain four different disciplines of science. The four Vedas are Rug, Yajur, Sama, Atharva. We know that Rug Veda was the first Veda and hence we shall decode it first. I had already said that man should have mastered smelting in the Kreta Yuga, that is the period that he lived on the mountains. Smelting is called Urukku in Tamil. Urukku deformed to Rukku and finally to Ruk, which some people call it as Rig. Urukku, Rukku, Ruk, Rig. Hence, Rig Veda should have originally contained scientific and technological information on smelting. The foregoing discussion supports this surmise.
Tamil was the first language of Homo sapiens. Every Tamil word should have a meaning. The word Urukku itself should have evolved out of two words called Uru and Akku. Uru plus Akku, Uruvakku, Urukku. Uru means new shape or form and Akku means cook. Hence, Uruvakku actually means obtaining a new form through heating. As man created new metals by this way, this word took a larger meaning of creating anything new, not necessarily by heating. Obviously, the word Uruvakku means create in Tamil. However, Uruvakku gave rise to the new word Urukku to refer to the process of melting by heating. Hence, Urukku means melting. Smelting is a process which extracts metal from its ore. Extraction happens because of separation, that is, splitting the compound form of metal to its elemental states and separating them using heat and other additives as it might be necessary. Obviously, the process of splitting occurs in smelting. Vedan, as discussed in Kala Bhairav video, means the hunter who splits his prey. As Vedan means the splitter, Vedam means the process of splitting. Hence, the original meaning of Vedam was splitting, separating, dividing, etc. Hence, Urukku Vedam means splitting by melting. In Tamil, Urukku Vedam means Urukki Pirithal. Urukki means by melting. Pirithal means separation. In fact, surprisingly, the word smelting originated from the phrase splitting by melting. Splitting by melting is equal to smelting. This English etymology further proves that Rukveda means the science of smelting. It is interesting to note that the English word melt originated from mel, meaning soften of Tamil. The English word split originated from Tamil word pila, meaning split in Tamil. Pila, spila, split. I had inferred that Vedam means splitting in the foregoing discussion as it was a process carried out by the Vedan, the hunter. However, I would prove that Vedam means splitting through independent and surprising evidence in the course of this video. Kindly await this unusual surprise. Whatever I thought intuitively, I am able to establish conclusively through corroboration. Hence, I am myself amazed on the wholesome phenomenon called Tamil. Even though the word Urukku meant melting in Rukveda times, it assumed a further and larger meaning in the course of time as extracting metal from ore. When this happened, the word Vedam, which stood for splitting during Rukveda times, started to mean science as the word Urukku itself became a wholesome word for smelting, which involves melting and separating. That is how Vedam came to be understood as a general word for science in the course of time. Everything is falling in place. Hence, Rukveda should have handled scientific information on smelting of ores. Metal is extracted from ore through smelting, which splits the ore by heating. It would be interesting to know that the word ore means joined or compounded in Tamil. Obviously, we have to split it to get back metal. We shall discuss this further at the end of this video part when I present proof from Slovakian language too for the meaning of Rukvedam. I would now take up Atharva Veda. We know that Shiva is having a drum in his hand. We know that Shiva was a hunter and that he is wearing tiger skin as his waist cover. We also know that drums were made using animal skins. Obviously, Shiva should have created or improved the percussion sound equipment. He should have done research on the variety of animal skins, on their sound property, and the variety of house materials on which the skins were wrapped. Rhythm concept should have developed during Shiva's times, but melody did not. Melody requires continuous or semi-continuous variation of frequency, which we cannot make with percussion equipment. But distinct different sounds from different percussion equipment would help make good rhythms. Shiva should have documented all this info. That document should have been named by a Tamil word. Vibration is called in Tamil as Adhirvu. Hence, he should have named the document as Adhirvu Vedam, that is, science of vibrations. Adhirvu Vedam deformed to Atharva Vedam. Here, the document means oral and poetic documents, which are passed on to all the succeeding generations through word of mouth by songs. I would establish that my interpretation of Atharva Vedam is correct through some Tamil-specific information here. The percussion equipment in the hand of Shiva is called Udukkai. However, Parai was the original, popular percussion equipment of Tamils. The word Parai deformed from its original called Varai, which means mountain range in Tamil. Varai deformed to Parai. Obviously, the word Parai means that it was developed in the mountains and hence it was named after the mountain range. I have properly deciphered the word Parai for the first time and it is an extraordinary information proving that it was developed during the times that man lived on the mountains. Shiva was a mountain man. Obviously, Shiva was involved in the creation of Parai and as said above, he should have documented the technology and called it Adurva Vedam, meaning science of vibrations. The Parayas who play Parai were branded as social outcasts by the Brahmins, but they were actually children of Shiva, and Shiva himself was a Parayan. These people were the most ancient people of Tamil Nadu, as mountain is the first abode of human in the first human yuga called the Kreta Yuga. Kreta Yuga means the period that man lived only on the mountain range. Kari, Kiri, Krita, Kreta. Arinyar Guna has expressed the view that Parai means ancient, inferring from the term parampara, that is parampare, and hence opined that Parayar means ancient people. I am now establishing concretely through this video that Parai originated on the mountains and also the word Parayars deformed from its original called Varayars, which meant people of the mountains. Unexpectedly, through this video on Veda, we have established the historical fact about Parayars, which was eluding so far. Parayars were called so as they belong to the mountains and not because they play Parai. Parampara is a term to mean our most ancient ancestors in Tamil. We shall have a closer look at this word to extract more info. Paran plus Parai, Parampara. Here, Paran means ancient male and Parai means ancient female. Incidentally, the word Paran also means a high living place or even an attic. This is so because Paran also deformed from its original called Varan, which meant man of the mountain range. Var or Varai both mean mountain range and Varan means belonging to the mountain range. Varan deformed to Paran. Hence, the word Paramparai refers to the most ancient people of both the genders. The most ancient people lived on the mountains and there is no wonder that this term means ancient elders. There are actually seven layers of generations in sequential order as shown in the slide. Paran, Parai. Seyon, Seyol. Ottan, Otti. Putan, Putti. Patan, Pati. Tandai, Thai. Kanavan, Manaivi. Most ancient generation is the top and the present generation is the bottom. I would return from this digression with a few more words on this subject. Come from mountains a few thousand years ago to northern Tamil Nadu to engage in agricultural activities. But as of now, I am not sure when exactly they migrated and the situation that forced them to migrate. Further research is required to throw light on this subject. I would digress a little more to discuss one more aspect of Parai. Vedam was also called Marai in Tamil. The four Vedas were called Nangu plus Marai, Nan Marai. Nangu means four. The word Marai deformed from Parai. The words starting with sounds P or M mutually deform to one another, like Mallar becoming Pallar or Mumbai becoming Bombay, etc. As Vedam evolved in the mountains, it was called as Varai originally, which deformed to Marai. Varai, Parai, Marai. Shiva trained a group of students as scientists through his Gurukula education. Hence, the section of mountain society who practiced various streams of science was called Marayar. We have come full circle and established that Adurva Vedam actually means Adurva Vedam and it is nothing but the science of vibrations. I would make an exclusive video on the evolution of music and various types of musical instruments and their period of development later. We shall now consider Yajur Vedam. The word Yajur means southern king and we shall see how. The word Arasu, which means king or kingdom, would deform to Asura and Asura would deform to Sura, that is Sur. Hence, Ya plus Sur, Yasur, Yajur. Ya means south and Sur means king and hence Yasur or Yajur means southern king, otherwise called as Dakshinamurti and hence it means Shiva. Hence, Shiva Veda called as Yajur Veda should have handled a variety of miscellaneous sciences other than the ones handled by Ruk, Sama and Atharva Veda. And that is why it should have been called generally as Shiva Veda. Hence, Yajur Veda is the miscellaneous Veda preached by Shiva. The term Yajur Veda has revealed the deeper secret that it was Shiva who preached Vedam, not the Aryans as claimed by the Brahmins. Tamil words have the key to history. We shall now take up Sama Veda. We have to understand first what Sama means. There are many a shades of meaning for the word Sama. Actually, the word Samam evolved from Yamam. Yamam, Samam. Yamam is a time between 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. Hence, Samam should have actually meant middle of the night. Hence, it shall be likely that Samaveda meant science of astronomy. This is one possibility. The other possibility is Samam also stands for time. Mun Samam, Pin Samam, or Artha Samam are the words describing evening, morning, or midnight respectively. The word Samam deformed to give a word called Samayam, which means time. Hence, Samavedam shall mean science of time. This is yet another interpretation. Samai is cereal grown originally on the mountains. And Samaveda shall also mean science of plant growth. This is the third interpretation. The word Sama appears in yet another phrase, Sama, Dana, Beda, and Danda. This phrase describes a sequential method of approach in solving human problems and struggles. Samam. Samam is the first approach in solving human problems. Consoling by agreeing to the complaints, thus sympathizing with the party concerned, is the first approach. The consoling Tamil word which expresses agreement is Amam. Just listen to the way we console. Ama, Ama, Sari, Sari, Ama, Ama. You got it now? This Ama deformed to Sama, and that's how the word Sama evolved. We shall also consider the other three methods, as it is very much relevant here. Danam. Following agreement to complaints, we appease the suffering people by donating material goods as a second step in problem solving. Danam means donation. Bedam. If the first two approaches fail to convince the belligerent people and the problem eludes solution, the next step is to develop division among the problematic people so that there is confusion in their ranks and they would end up quarreling among themselves and forget the original problem itself. Thus, splitting or dividing the problematic people forms a third method and is called Bedam. The word Bedam deformed from its original form called Vedam. Vedam deforms to Bedam. We have seen already that Vedam means the process of splitting, and this is very much confirmed by the word Bedam, which means causing division here. This confirmation has come from a very ancient saying related to problem-solving methodology of human problems. This again proves that Rukvedam is absolutely correct term, which simply means splitting by melting in Tamil. Dandam. If all the three previous methods fail, we have to engage in war to punish the offenders to settle dispute. This is the last resort. Dandu means stem of a plant which is used to punish offenders by beating with it. From Dandu came the Tamil word Dandanai. Dandu plus Anai, Dandanai. Dandanai means embracing using Dandu. Meaning the purpose of Dandani originates from love. Reforming loved ones by gentle use of force is called Dandani. Hence, death penalty cannot be called as Marana Dandani. It should be correctly termed as Marana Dandam. Ama, Dana, Veda, Danda became Sama, Veda, Danda in the course of time. The fact that this ancient political methodology uses the word Vedam, that is Vedam, as one of the four methods, I am inclined to think that this problem-solving methodology should have been developed by Shiva, and hence Samaveda should have meant political science. Shiva is called Adi Nadan, and Nadan means leader, and hence it is very likely that he, being the leader of a large group of people, would have developed this problem-solving technique to successfully rule over his people. I have given four possible interpretations of Samaveda. Which is the correct one? I would prove that political science is the correct meaning of Samaveda, using the Slovakian connection at the end of this video part. Hence, I have established that four Veda were actually sciences using etymology of the very names of Veda and corroborating with relevant historical and traditional information on Shiva. Vedam originally meant splitting during Rukveda times, and it meant science in the course of time. Does the fact that Vedam means science could be established positively from other sources of information? Yes, very much. This is the interesting part of it. After I published my video, Amazing Historical Facts on Kala Bhairava, corrected version, Mr. Marek Zelem of Slovakia contacted me through email. He was astonished by the fact that Vedam came from the word Vedan, which I hypothesized in that video. He told me that Veda means science in Slovakian language. I was pleasantly surprised and happy that my discovery that Vedam meant science has been established through completely a new and unexpected source. I mailed him back confirming that Veda means science, citing the Tamil word Vedial as reference. I then wrote to him about the four Veda being different sciences, as described in this video. I wrote to him that Rukh Veda means science of smelting. Astonishingly, he responded back saying that in Slovak, Veda Rud means science of wars. I was really stunned and my happiness had no bound. Tamil, Rukh Veda is equal to science of smelting. Slovak, Veda Rud is equal to science of wars. It sounds very obvious as smelting and war are tightly connected words. Let me digress here to establish the wholesome beauty of the subject that I am discussing here. War is a Tamil word which means united or combined. It originated from Tamil root word val, which means join. For instance, Olympics is a game played jointly by a number of countries. The val in Olympics signifies joint activity. Likewise, varai is another word which evolved from the root val. In fact, as I have already explained in the Startling Facts on Orion Constellation video, the star constellation which depicts Shiva is called Orion, and it means the possessor of varai. Varai means joining of stars to form a beautiful figure. Likewise, or means joined or combined elements in Tamil. Or is actually a compound of metal and non-metal, that is, joined form of a metal and non-metal. For instance, magnetite is a ore which has the chemical formula Fe3O4, and hematite is a ore which has chemical formula Fe2O3, which are the typical combined form of metal iron with non-metal oxygen. Obviously, we have to split this ore to recover iron metal. We melt it to split it and take away oxygen as carbon dioxide using coke as additive. Obviously, Rukh Veda means splitting by melting. I have not only established that Veda means science, but also established that Rukh Veda means science of smelting using Tamil and Slovakian connection. Not only that, my friendship with the Slovak Marek Zelom has helped me to identify the correct meaning of Sama Veda out of the four possibilities that I discussed already. He wrote to me that Samo Vleda means autocracy and Vleda means government. From what he wrote to me, it is obvious that Sama Veda, which meant political science in Tamil, deformed in Slovak as Samo Vleda to mean autocracy. And autocracy means monarchy. Shiva was a king and hence Sama Veda should have meant political science only. This is an extraordinary proof coming from a land far away from Tamil land. To prove that it is not just a coincidence, he wrote to me that they should have practiced Asivaham long ago, as there are words in Slovak which are connected to Asivaham. Mr. Marek Zelom told me that Kali, Kalan, Lachumi, Lakomi and Saraswati, Velikani are very much in use in the current society with the same meaning, even though they were forcibly converted to Christianity long ago. He says that historian Dr. Cyril Ronmik of Slovakia had written a book on the connection between Slovak and Tamil. My thesis on Vedas stands scrutinized on its own. However, I have provided supporting evidence from a culture far away from Tamil culture. This is because Isa was the common ancestor god of the entire humanity, and because humanity separated into different races only after the deluge, which is about 11,000 years ago. Hence, not only Slovakian culture, but every ancient culture should have supporting evidence for my thesis on Vedas. For instance, I feel that Enoch of Jewish culture was Isa, and the book of Enoch should have some material related to Vedas. I solicit esteemed comments from viewers of all ancient cultures of the world.
Veda comes from the root sound vid, which literally means to know or to understand. This is the root sound from which words like Vidya, which means learning, and Vidwan and Vidushi, which mean a learned man and a learned woman, come from. The literal meaning of the word Veda is just knowledge. Knowledge of what? Of anything and everything in existence. This is the context in which it is said, Ananta vai Vedaha, which means the systems of knowledge are infinite. But we all have heard that there are four Vedas, each of which have four components of their own. You might have also heard that there are six fields of study to understand these four components of the Vedas, called as Vedangas. If the Vedas are Ananta or infinite, how did this classification come about? How many such components of study actually exist? And how to go about exploring each of them systematically? We'll explore all these topics in this video. The Sanskrit channel is an effort to explore a vast variety of topics from original Sanskrit literature. If you wish to support this effort, consider becoming a sponsor on Patreon or make a one-time contribution through these options. Your support will help us create more of these videos more frequently on more number of topics. Do check out all the links in the description below. In the tradition of Sanatana Dharma, Whenever somebody realized something of immense value in their lives, they did not immediately hide it and patent it. They sought others who are in the pursuit of that same knowledge to pass it on to them and establish a lineage to pursue that knowledge system further. This is called as Guru Shishya Parampara. All of such systems of knowledge could be classified into two different categories: those which are thought up and created through human intellect, and those that are perceived and realized by the human mind. The first category includes knowledge systems like the creation and use of various tools of survival, like hunting and farming tools, tools to enhance the external sense perceptions, and methods to make life more secure and comfortable. It also includes knowledge systems like the rules of societal behavior and function, the responsibilities and duties between the individual components of a family, of a society, and so on. And then there are knowledge systems which are existential, like how the creation came about, how life functions within the human body and outside it, the relationship between creatures and the forces of creation, the purpose and possibilities that this relationship comes with, and so on. While the first kind of knowledge systems are subject to change with the times one lives in and the society around, the second kind of knowledge systems stay valid and true, irrespective of societal structures and needs of the time. This is knowledge which is not a product of the human mind. We might perceive it and put it to use, but it is not a product of human thought and imagination. This is the context in which these systems of knowledge are called as apaurusheyas, or not man-made. The son of sage Parashara, called Krishna Dvaipayana, took all these apaurusheyas and classified them into four broad groups. The first of them is called as Rigveda. It is a compilation of various hymns, each of which is called as Rig, which means descriptive words of praise. The hymns of Rigveda describe and praise the properties of various natural elements around us, giving them personified forms of Agni, Indra, Varuna, Mitra, Soma, and so on. The second classification is called as Yajurveda, where the word Yajus literally means a practice or a ritual. This Veda is a realization of the power of performing rituals. It contains instructions as to how to perform various kinds of rituals, which are conducive for specific aspects of human well-being. In terms of textual content, it shares a lot of hymns in common with the Rigveda. The third classification is called as the Sama Veda, where the word Saman literally means a gentle song. This Veda is a realization of the power of musical notes. It delves into the utterance of specific chants to a set tune. This Veda is seen as the origin for the field of Sangeeta, or music, in Sanatana Dharma. This Veda too shares a lot of common text with the Rig Veda, but in a more practical context of chanting it as a song. The fourth and the final categorization, called as Atharva Veda, has a lot of content which is unique from the rest of the three, but the realizations contained within it, as perceived by sage Atharvan, are still apaurusheya, or not made up in the human mind. This Veda deals with the knowledge of handling life at a more physical level of existence, how to deal with various kinds of discomforts and diseases, what is considered as wealth in human life, how to acquire, consume, and disseminate it, and so on. Because of this mammoth task of understanding all the apaurusheyas and then classifying them into four distinct categories, Krishna Dvaipayana is famously known by the name of Veda Vyasa, the one who described the Vedas. Every year, the brightest full moon night, called as Guru Purnima, is also remembered by the name of Vyasa Purnima in his memory. Let us now go one level deeper to understand the components of each Veda. All the four Vedas can be thought of as having four sections called Samhita, a compilation of all the realized hymns, Brahmana, explanation of how to put them to practical use, Aranyaka, various internal observances one can follow, and Upanishad, footnotes which capture the entire essence of the Veda. Each of these four components are meant to be used in each of the four stages of human life called as ashramas. Samhita section is the object of focus for someone in Brahmacharya ashrama or during the stage of educational upbringing. Brahmana section is of use to someone in Grihastha ashrama to put whatever has been learnt in Samhita to practical use. Aranyaka section is supposed to be put to practice during Vanaprastha ashrama or during one's withdrawal away from the society into a secluded area for spiritual pursuits. And finally, the Upanishad section is said to be of practical use during Sannyasa ashrama, where one renounces the worldly pursuits in search for the absolute truth of creation. The first two sections are called as Karma Khanda, or the segment of action, and the second two sections are called as Jnana Khanda, or the segment of knowledge. There were many other sages after Veda Vyasa who explained the concepts of these four Vedas and each of their four components further, resulting in a lot of branching up of these knowledge systems into various shakhas or branches. There are many, many subdivisions of Samhitas, Brahmanas, Aranyakas and Upanishads named after the sages who explored them uniquely. Each Veda is also ascribed with an Upaveda, or a subsystem of knowledge which is born out of the revelations contained within the Veda. Ayurveda, the study of Ayuhu or life itself, is ascribed to Rig Veda. Dhanurveda, the study of archery and warfare, is ascribed to Yajurveda. Gandharva Veda, the study of aesthetics, music and dance, is ascribed to Sama Veda. And Arthashastra, the study of the pursuit of wealth and prosperity, is ascribed to Atharva Veda. Sometimes people refer to a text of immense importance as the fifth Veda. Sage Vyasa's Mahabharatam, Ramcharitmanas by Goswami Tulsidas, and Natya Shastra by Bharatamuni are among the works which are often referred to as the fifth Veda, indicating their importance. Finally, various tools and methodologies to understand the knowledge of the Vedas have been authored by many sages. They are named as Vedangas and are classified under six categories called as Shiksha, the study of phonetic aspects and accents of the Vedic chants, Kalpa, the study of practices and proper application of these chants in rituals, Vyakarana, the study of grammatical rules, Nirukta, the study of intuitive etymology of Sanskrit words, Chanda, the study of poetic meter, and Jyotisha, the study of light, particularly the light from celestial objects, which can be roughly correlated with today's astrology. The website vedicheritage.gov.in has an extensive repository of text, audio, and video resources pertaining to some of the Vedas, their shakhas, the Upavedas, and Vedangas. If you wish to do a deep dive into the study of these topics, definitely check this website out. To sum it all up, the knowledge of the Vedas and the tools to understand their essence are highly varied and branched out. It is a pursuit of a lifetime to study the meanings encoded in them, and even more so to internalize their meanings and realize them at an experiential level. This is the main reason why the traditional Gurukul systems prioritize memorization before the analysis of meaning. Because even if the meanings of the Vedas could be understood at a textual level, the real benefit happens only when their true essence dawns upon the sadhaka's mind as experiential truth. I hope you enjoyed watching this video and found this information useful. Share it across with those whom you think might benefit from this. If you wish to support the production of more videos like these, consider becoming a sponsor on Patreon or make a one-time contribution all through the links in the description below. Also, consider clicking on the subscribe button and the bell icon beside it so that you are immediately notified of our latest updates. See you in the next video. Namaskaram.